The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Are you unhappy with your health and catch everything doing the rounds? Do you have a mystery illness the doctors can't treat? Are you searching for a better way to manage your health? My name is Kevin Davis. Our bioresonance system starts with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments during the same session. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today and make us your first choice for a healthier you.
Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show, in which I talk to people about and from the world of integrative medicine for cancer. My name's Robin Daly, and I'm the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that supports people with cancer who are looking to use integrative medicine to regain their health and well-being. My guest today lives in LA in California and is a professional singer. Summer Watson has had a spectacular career in between two life-size challenges. In her 20s, she survived the notorious Potter's Bar train crash, a 100-mile-an-hour derailment that left 7 people dead and 76 injured. And then, more recently, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. Her life experiences have taught her a lot, and she's agreed to share some of her insights with us today. I'm talking to Summer over the phone at her home in Los Angeles. Hi, Summer. Thank you very much for coming on the Yes to Life show.
Robin, thank you for having me. It's such a delight to meet all the listeners and to have this moment to chat with you.
Great. Okay, so the Yes to Life show is a broad church. I speak to all sorts of people in all walks of life, which, of course, is fascinating. I get to talk to some really interesting people who've led and are leading extraordinary lives. So you represent another first for the show, a classically trained singer with an interesting musical story, and I am very into music, but we won't be able to spend too much time on the music today. But you've got a lot to say on the subject of health, and in particular cancer as well, so that's why I'm speaking to you today. You've faced something that's derailing an ever-increasing number of young people's lives. So without going into the details too much just now, we'll get into those later, what would you say are the key factors that you ascribe to your diagnosis of cancer at such a young age?
Well, first and foremost, you know, in my 30s, I was at my fittest. You know, in my 20s, I very much focused on singing and my musical career. And, you know, when I moved to Los Angeles in my 30s, I really, you know, lived and soaked up the California lifestyle. I became vegetarian and loved to run on the beach and do yoga. But obviously the accumulation of stress throughout my life, from everything at, that I think most of the listeners can relate to, from breakups to, you know, struggles, you know, as growing into being a young lady and so forth, people used to chat to me and I used to take on all of their stresses, being an empath. And it really was the accumulation of stress sitting in my body and not having the genetic cancer line in my family. I was then diagnosed with cancer.
So you think stress is the key factor then, you're saying?
100%. I mean, obviously, that anyone who's done a little bit of research, and even if you know you've not had it or not had a major illness, I think you know people are aware, you know, what good food to eat and chemicals that are around us in environmental state, and also you know what toxicity in general we take in our bodies from, you know, what we drink and so forth, but you know, the type of alkali levels within the body, but I don't think we really realize that the body can't function with so much cortisol flying around. Now, I'm no expert by any means. This is just all my own, you know, growing, learning, and my own experiences in life. But I really think that this sort of the triangle of stress endured, you know, that we endure, the food that we eat and the toxicity that we take in from our environment, whether it be chemical or just, you know, anything from some sort of drama that might be going on or what we watch on television. And I think our bodies are not made to have so much fight or flight elements, that we're constantly heart racing, stressed about things. And we're not cavemen anymore. You know, we had that purely to go into the forest and get our food, and then it sort of went away for a few months, and then we go after it and chase after it and eat it and so forth. But we don't, we can't live like that on a daily, let alone hourly or minutely basis, from spikes of stress, whether it be work, relationship, friends, worry, concern, anxiety, and those kinds of things. So I've done, you know, a lot of reading, a lot of courses, a lot of personal work, you know, on understanding the levels of cortisol and how that should run in our system. And I really, really believe that not only can we heal our own bodies, but we have to be very mindful of the stress levels in our body.
Okay, well, look, I want to come back to that later. Very interesting, thank you. But now, yeah, I was just thinking that the listeners probably won't have failed to notice that despite the fact I'm talking to you in LA, you don't sound like a local from there. Your accent is giving you away as being from nearer to my home. Do you want to give us a bit of a picture of your background, where you grew up, what your childhood and your family was like, your early loves, your ambitions?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm British. I spent the first 12, 13 years of my life in Sussex, St. Leonard's, and I grew up, you know, loving many different instruments. I played flute and piano and sang. Molly Townsend was my singing teacher from the age of 3 or 4, and she's the main reason why I became a singer. And I actually would just love to give a little shout out to her. She recently, just very recently, passed away, and she really was a huge inspiration for me from a very, very young age as to why I love music. You know, I became a lifeguard. I loved the ocean. I horse rode. I was very active. And then we moved to Oxfordshire, and of course, you know, carried on music and writing and loved languages. And I got to a point when I was about 18, 19, I thought I'd love to pursue taking a degree. I was the first in my family to take a degree. And so I went off to music college, and it was all very new. You know, my father was in government, my mother was a chiropodist.
Okay.
And I really was on my own in terms of, having to really step forth into a whole new world.
Right. Okay. And what was your lifestyle like when you were a child, and then maybe as you went on to do your degree in your early career?
Well, my childhood was full. It was very, very busy. Went to school and had lots of extracurricular subjects, from trampolining, karate, which I actually loved, horse riding. Saturdays were jam-packed, up early. You know, mum would always make sort of porridge and toast, and I'd have my cod liver oil tablets and orange juice even from a very young age. And then it was off to doing my recorder lessons and piano lessons and those kind of things, horse riding in the afternoon and homework usually in later afternoon. And it was always a steady understanding of exploration, you know, learning all different types of things, to then working really, really hard at school, which I loved. And I found much, much enjoyment in music, from singing and choir and the Hastings Music Festival and those kinds of things. And that sort of strength led forth into when I then moved to Oxfordshire, working with the Oxfordshire Youth Chamber Choir, you know, socialising from that. We then travelled around Europe. And my family had a home in the Canary Islands, so we'd have some respite in Tenerife for our holidays, and I really enjoyed swimming to sort of let off the steam and so forth. And then that led to me then moving to London, and the whole focus was really training, like being an Olympic athlete, you know, really
right.
succeeding to the highest level of being the best musician possible.
Mm. So it sounds like you were unbelievably active when you were a bit younger, but then you've become very focused on just singly on music at a certain point and thrown yourself wholeheartedly into that.
Yeah, so I think, like, you know, most children, you know, they try lots of different sports and music, and Mum and Dad really wanted to give me as many opportunities as possible because they didn't have that in their childhood. So they were very busy working very hard in their own careers, and they wanted me to just be extremely fulfilled as a, you know, young person, mm-hmm. and to build my confidence.
Right.
You know, I stayed for 3 months in Martinique, on the island with a French family, by myself at the age of 9 to really conquer the language of French, because I was struggling at school with the textbooks, and so they thought outside the box, and off I went and stayed with the family. And, you know, it's a huge cultural shock, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And I came back fluent in French and just really applied that to then my life in my 20s when I was at music college and thought, gosh, I need to learn German, I have to learn French and Italian as an opera singer. Languages is a key, they're very much a key part of being a singer. And I then took the initiative every summer on our break during the degree program to get a nannying job in France, Germany, Italy, and so forth, for 2 to 3 months at a time, to really, you know, understand a much higher level of the language, which I absolutely loved, because it's obviously not just the language you take up, it's the food and the people and different environment, and you know all the history that I've had as a learning of a child suddenly all made sense. And that really sort of stuck with me.
How interesting. There, as you say, it's kind of a crash course in languages, just to throw yourself in somewhere, isn't it?
Really, you know, very, very much so. And I say this to, you know, anyone that I meet these days, you know, you have to find your way of not only in life, but of learning. I think it's really, really important to have that seeking spirit. And it doesn't really matter what age you are, you know, whether you're 8 or 80, I think it's really, really necessary for the functioning of the body and mind to have the seeking spirit, whether it be for languages or learning about health or music, and to really just keep yourself very, very open.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, look, we've got to get on to talking about the fact you've had cancer. The show's about cancer and integrative medicine in particular, so I want to get there. But at what age were you when you got diagnosed?
I was 37 years old.
37. So your career was already thoroughly underway at that point, obviously. Do you want to just say briefly what happened during that period, the sort of key things that happened to you in your career?
Yeah, so I signed to Sony directly after I left Sony record label, directly after I left music college. My key want was to take all of this beautiful music, classical, adult contemporary, film music, combine it all together and just sing it for everybody, for the masses, not just to sing in opera houses or just in concert halls. I wanted to reach a much wider audience. And so I was thrilled when I was given the opportunity to record a record with Sony, and off the back of that, it was number one in America, number two in the UK charts, and I toured the world, and I had so many amazing opportunities. And, you know, I'd had a few personal things that I had to overcome. I was in the Potter's Bar train crash.
Yes.
That was one sort of major significant moment in my life. Whilst being at the very beginning of my career, and that was the first moment where I had to start looking at mindful meditation, and to understand anxiety, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. And I learned, you know, a fair amount. And then, as life takes you, you get back on course and you go back into your sort of, you know, usual ways. But I'd had so much joy from traveling the world. And then I lived in Vienna for a couple of years and performed there. And now I live in Los Angeles, singing film soundtracks and, you know, coaching other artists and perform fashion shows and concerts and all these wonderful moments. And then out of nowhere, I thought I'd get a mammogram. You know, as fit as a fiddle. I'd never had flu. I'd never had a filling. I'd never stepped into a hospital. You know, I was really, really blessed with my health for my entire life. And as, you know, we do as young women, we take responsibility and think, right, we're at that sort of age, let's get a mammogram. And I honestly thought, Robin, that I would just go in, get it done, come out, get the results, and, you know, just carry on as normal. And then I was on this sort of train wreck, no pun intended, of further testing, further biopsies. And it was so bizarre because I was at my fittest, physically speaking and mentally speaking, and I honestly thought that the doctors had the wrong file. And I even joked, wow. I said, oh, don't be silly, you know, you've got somebody else's file, you know,
right.
Do further biopsies, what are you talking about? And there my life just changed overnight.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? There's you very often hear this story of people who are, you know, superbly healthy in every way. You know, they've really just hardly had a day off work or anything. And then the first thing that hits them is a diagnosis of cancer. And, you know, it seems it's completely unexpected. It's completely out of the blue, apparently. Obviously, it can't be out of the blue because it takes time for these things to develop. And there has to be some reason. But it's definitely, it's in a different kind of league to normal illnesses in that way, isn't it?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you know, the big C, you can't get much bigger than that. You know, obviously people have accidents and, you know, and get diagnosed with other types of diseases. And it's a moment and it's a blessing for us to really look at that and for us to really just kind of put the brakes on and go, oh, okay, not to sort of fall into free fall, but to exactly what you said, to kind of look at, it can't just come out of nowhere. Because there I was, yoga every single day, greens juicing, perfect alkaline level, meditation, you know, I didn't drink alcohol, it was really happy, living in California, all these amazing things. Yes, I've been through the train wreck and endured post-traumatic stress disorder and understood mindful meditation and so forth. But it made me stop and it made me think. And I was diagnosed with stage 3/4 breast cancer. So it was really serious.
Yes.
Here I was in America on my own. I had some friends, but I didn't have a boyfriend at the time. It's not like I had children and a family unit. My parents were living in the Canary Islands, and I was on my own.
Right.
And it really makes you stop and think. So very briefly, from the decision that I obviously had to have a mastectomy, because I was, you know, I was tiny, naturally, you know, the genes I have, it runs in our family, we're slim, but I was quite small, so therefore the size of the lump to be diagnosed at that stage was pretty serious. And apparently it had been growing, they could date it. It'd been there for a couple of years.
Right.
And it made me think what happened to me 2 to 3 years ago, and I'd had a major breakup, and this is the first time I've ever shared this.
Mm.
We all go through breakups. We all have a heart, and some people keep it more guarded than others.
Mm-hmm.
Being musicians, you know, we're very vulnerable.
Right.
And I am very proud of the fact that I have a huge heart. Now, this is great on the one end, because you can have compassion and kindness and, you know, like I have a golden retriever and all you want to do is love. But unless you're careful, you don't protect yourself. You have no boundaries in place. You just keep taking and taking and taking, and you don't have any protection for yourself. And so you end up just keep soaking up the toxicities all around you. And obviously this breakup was, you know, pretty huge, and it destroyed my heart. I remember having such pain in my chest that I actually thought I was having a stroke. I thought I had heart problems to the point that when I went to the UK, I actually saw a very well-known heart specialist because I thought I was having issues with my heart physically.
Right.
And it wasn't. It was all emotional. And so what I decided, once I'd had the mastectomy, you know, I had a team of doctors telling me I had to do, you know, the usual routine of chemo, radiation, take tamoxifen, which are the pills you get given once you've come through all those various stages.
Mm-hmm.
And being an opera singer, your vocal cords are your life. It's sort of like, you know, being an Olympic swimmer, you know, your arms and legs and breath, they're your life. So if someone says you've got to chop off your legs, you know, you're no longer going to be a swimmer.
Right.
In that category. So that was the deciding factor for me not to have chemo. And then being 37, being told if I have radiation, I wouldn't be able to have children. You know, it would be very risky. For the 3-4 years after that, at the key stage, being a woman, that it would have considerable effect on other areas of my body to be able to have children. And this is only my personal experience, and I don't know the medical ins and outs, but I had to decide I didn't want to burn my vocal cords, so I chose not to do chemo.
Just to be clear with the chemo then, that there's a clear risk then of the treatment damaging your vocal cords.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would have had to start from scratch training, and it could have affected my voice.
Right.
Now, again, up to any of the listeners out there, all I say, I'm not a professional. This is just my story, and I would never want to say, don't do chemo, don't do radiation, don't take tamoxifen. But you know, and you may hear a slight quiver in my voice because it's not easy for me to talk about this. All I would say is to anyone who's wanting to maybe look at their life and think, I've got a lot of stress in my life, or it's just not running the way I want my life to run, or God forbid you get diagnosed a really awful disease, whether it's diabetes or, you know, an autoimmune disease or cancer even, it's very important, which I didn't understand this at the time, to sit quietly, to get your circle of people around you who are not toxic, and that doesn't mean necessarily family, it can be anybody, it can be someone you've just met, and to sit quietly and to go internally and to figure out what works for you, and to take your power. This is a blessing and a moment for you to claim your power, whether you're a child, a woman, a husband, a male, an older person, but to stop and think and to them, we touched on technology, use the technology that's out there, read every book you can get your hands on, and then analyze it all and to think and make a plan with what works for you. Because so many people I've spoken to, and you know, whether they've been diagnosed with cancer, whether they're going through it, or whether they just aren't feeling that great in their own life, it's very easy to just suddenly listen to a friend, listen to a family member, listen to a radio show, and kind of go, oh, right, okay, I should just do that, and make very rash decisions. Okay, I've got the genetic gene. I'm just going to have a mastectomy and get it done. No. Mm. Talk to people. If we're talking about cancer, if you have the genetic gene, don't just, okay, quick, the doctor says I have the gene, I must just get both of my breasts you removed and get on with it and move forward. No. Talk to people who've done that. What does it feel like? The doctors don't tell you, what do the implants feel? Will I have implants? You know, will there be pus seeping out of my, you know, breast after that? You know, all the little details the doctors don't tell you, which I didn't know any of that, and it's not in any book. You have to talk to people and then gradually make a decision that will work for you.
So can I ask, I mean, it's a very rational approach that you've described there, and it takes time. The general thing with cancer is that, of course, you're under pressure and there's no time, is the kind of message that's coming from the oncologists. How did you deal with that? How did you carve out the space to be able to make up your own mind in the way you described?
Well, first of all, no one is prepared for this journey. No one. Even if your family members or friends have gone through it, you go into a state of shock. I know I did.
Right.
And I very quickly had to get some key people in my life. Even the basics of dealing with the hospitals and the paperwork. Every time you go to the hospital, you have to fill out piles of paperwork. Put down all your details that you're single and this and that and what age you are and how much you weigh and, you know, what the condition is, then they do the blood work. Oh, but I just did my blood work last week. And you have to do it again. And it's really frustrating. Mm. So I put in place even someone to just take care of all the paperwork because I couldn't cope with it. Then they ask you to go in the hospital and you're in these tiny rooms. And if you suffer from anxiety or claustrophobia like I did, the first few I went to, it just heightened my anxiety to the point where I couldn't function. I couldn't understand what the doctor was telling me. They talk in doctor language. And I took my power by saying, no, you have a garden outside. I would like to sit outside in the garden. I know you always have these meetings in these tiny little rooms and so forth, but I would like to sit in the garden and you can tell me everything that I'm going through. And it's perfectly possible. So you make it work for you.
How did that suggestion go down?
I was able to make that work. And they were
great.
Very accommodating.
Excellent.
And on top of it, my golden retriever, because I mentioned I went through the Potter's Bar train accident and I actually had a pretty severe case of post-traumatic stress disorder, I was functioning for 10 years. Managed able to get back on planes and trains. And then when I got this news of the cancer and going through all of it, I then fell back into really severe anxiety.
Right.
And it was making it worse. And the levels of cortisol, it was even worse. So they actually even allowed me to bring my golden retriever into the hospital for the meetings, not for the sort of, you know, blood tests,
the clinical
and
stuff.
Like that, but
no.
Any conversations any conversation I had to have with them so that I could even have a hope of understanding what they were talking about, I was able to have the meeting in the garden. I was able to bring her into the foyer and really quivering now. Sorry, everyone.
Difficult period
really
to revisit.
It's not easy, but I really feel empowered that I want to share my story with anyone who's going through this, that they can just sit down and make it work for them. What makes it work for you?
Right.
You had mentioned the timeline. And again, if you're in the financial position to be able to do the oxygen treatments and the chakra work and the Reiki work and the go and see the alternative therapist and the acupuncture and go on to the Gerson program, which is just juicing of a very high intense level of all various vitamin injections, which cost hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, get the quotes, find out what does your medical insurance cover, see if you can do it, great. Find out about all of the different essential oils, all the different programs, putting frankincense and different types of essential oils on the different parts, which are great for cancer. I personally was not in that fortunate position. I had very basic medical insurance. I was blessed to be able to be at UCLA, which is a wonderful hospital here in California. And I was on a timeline. You know, I had a month with stage 3 breast cancer, and it was horrible. If I had that option to be able to do the alternative route, I would have loved to have been able to take that chance of just healing with my mind, with integrative medicine, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, all of these things, because the body can heal. And my gut said, that's what I wanted, but I wasn't in a financial position to be able to do that. So I would say take a week or two or three. You know, you've had the lump or whatever diagnosis you've had for a little while, so take some time to be able to get some key people around you and really full-on research all of the things I just said, because I really truly believe, you know, there's a wonderful documentary that's just come out called Heal, H-E-A-L,
mm-hmm.
Which I believe is available on Netflix. And it just goes to show from, you know, internal damage, broken bones, spinal issues, in the autoimmune disease, cancer, the mind can heal all of these with all of these other alternative medicines.
Mm. Right. So there's one particular aspect I'm interested to ask you about, because with some people, if they take this moment seriously, this moment of diagnosis, that they can make huge changes in their lifestyle, which can have a huge impact. Now, you're one of those people who actually already had quite a good lifestyle. You've talked about stress, which has obviously played a big part in your life, and you could therefore make some changes there for sure. But in the other areas, did you struggle to improve your lifestyle or to make changes that you thought were going to help?
So here I was, a super fit opera singer. You know, it was always the joke, it's not over till the fat lady sings. You know that common phrase, right?
Yes.
That was the ongoing joke with me, that anybody I met, from a little dinner that I sang at to singing at Buckingham Palace to singing for, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, everybody I met was, oh, you're so slim. And I thought opera singers were big. And so I really, you know, obviously with my genes, that was awesome. But I really enjoyed sport. I really enjoyed fitness and dancing and swimming and all that kind of stuff. That was great. You'd mentioned the anxiety, you mentioned the stress, and I kind of touched on a bit of meditation. When I went through the crash, I really got into mindful meditation, but I didn't follow through with it. I did it for about a year or two, mm-hmm. but it wasn't like I was then sticking with it. And that was a major sign. And I would say that there I was, having just had this mastectomy, and it's really easy just to roll off the tongue. Yeah, I had a mastectomy.
Right.
Or again, any of your listeners, yeah, I've got the gene, I'm just going to have a mastectomy. But anybody who's listening, I had to learn to walk again. I had to learn how to use my right arm again. I couldn't lift anything heavier than a paper plate. You know those ones you have at little parties mm-hmm. and things? I couldn't. It took a year or two, and even now, the nerves are still mending, for for me to be able to lift my arm, if you imagine me lifting my right arm an inch, mm-hmm. all the way up to my ear, you know, like to the sky. And it's all black when you come out of the operation from the bruising. That emotionally plays such a part. You think, oh my God, what have I had done?
Right.
It's not just having like a boob job, you know, in and out in a day. And then you have the scars to deal with emotionally. So physically, and you're exhausted all the time. Because when I was diagnosed with cancer, I didn't ever feel unwell. It's not like you begin to feel unwell and you're dying.
No.
I felt great. The night before I went in, I did a photo shoot in the bath for a well-known film director whose mother had breast cancer, and we were doing a book of lots of actors and singers and, you know, celebrities trying to promote breast cancer awareness. So I did a photo shoot. I had Manny Petty, felt great, felt so empowered, felt beautiful. And I felt amazing. The next morning, I was having my right breast removed. Like, I didn't ever feel unwell.
Right.
And there's this big myth when you have cancer that you don't feel well. I'm sure when you go through chemo and radiation, that's when you don't feel well.
Mm-hmm.
I physically had never been stunted in my life before.
Mm.
On, you know, coming out, walking around the ward on morphine and having to figure out how to find my strength again. So I not only had to build my physical well-being from learning to walk, learning to lift things. I couldn't shower. I couldn't dress myself. I had to take the drip out. You know, you have to do, I had to do all of that by myself. If you have a husband or some children or a live-in nurse and all of these things, that's a bonus. I didn't have any of that. I had a girlfriend of mine who was very sweet and stayed with me in hospital, and that was great. But you have to plan for all of that. Now, let me get to the emotional point. On top of having to fight for my life, literally to get back to a physical sense of fitness,
mm-hmm.
I had to draw on inspiration. Luckily, I was given such a strong sense of drive, whether it be through genes or just through learning, from my parents. You know, my father's a Yorkshire chap, and my mum was brought up with nothing, very, very poor, and had to have this sense of drive to survive. And that then was sort of, you know, given to me. And so I've always had a sense of drive, but that then, rather than thinking, right, I'm going to succeed in music, it had to be, right, I'm going to be able to walk around the hospital ward. I'm going to be able to get on the treadmill. I'm going to have the courage to go to a little store and buy my first sports bra and be able to get it on and not burst into tears. All of these things, nobody tells you. The doctors don't tell you. It's not in any documentary, and it's certainly not in any book. Now, the emotional state, I then have to look at, if I've gone through all of that, what is going on in my life where I soak up toxins from other people, whether it be a friend telling me about drama going on in their life, whether it be them telling me about a breakup that I think I'm helping them by listening? It's an energy that you soak up, whether it be a toxic member of a friendship that you get treated in a certain way that isn't good for you and you don't even realize it. We have to stand for more and set our boundaries, whether it be a family member. And I had to start to evaluate how I felt when I spent time with people. At the end of that time, like say it be have a little coffee with a friend or have a conversation with a family member or whatever it was, how did I feel afterwards? Did I feel drained?
Mm-hmm.
Did I feel shaky and nervous? Or did I feel full of joy, excited, full of power? And if it was the latter, I kept that. If it was the former, like the first two things I just said,
mm-hmm.
I had to let go of it. And I was still cordial, but I had to minimize that interaction. And once I'd learned that lesson and began to start applying that to my life, I applied it in all other areas of my life, from when I'm in my home and all the different things in my home, when I hold a photograph up of whatever, or a book I have in my home, or some letters, or an old piece of furniture from a previous moment in my life. How does it make me feel? Now, as kooky as this might sound, and your listeners might think, God, she spent too much time in Los Angeles. She sounds so Californian. But honestly, I have and sat in my home with hundreds of books on all of these different things that I have read. And I'm passing on to you these little tidbits of tokens of really things that can help you, because it's all about energy. How do you feel walking around from the very first moment you wake up to the last moment you go to bed? And the only thing that you should feel first thing in the morning you wake up is a sense of joy and excitement for the day. Whatever you have to deal with, children, nappies, CEO positions, you know, marriage, divorce, whatever it is, to the moment you go to bed, is a sense of joy and achievement that you enjoyed that day, every moment, and that you were able to let go of any anger, frustration, difficulties, anxiety. Let it go. Let it go. And then finally, I wanted to touch on, we've talked about the friends and family, or work scenarios and toxicity. We talked on anything that you touch and feel in your home. How does it feel for it to be around? And to let go of that, get rid of it, replace it with things that make you feel good. And that extends to, oh, and I actually want to mention a wonderful book called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. There's a whole wave of excitement by this lady called Marie Kondo. She has a series, and this isn't a plug. It's just so exciting that you talk about technology. There's this amazing documentary, or series rather, by this lady, Marie Kondo, K-O-N-D-O. Mm-hmm. And it's about, you know, the organization in your home. You know, like the garage is full of clutter, your office is full of, you know, old love letters or books, or, you know, even for me, you know, I had books on cancer, and I thought, no, I don't want to be reminded of the difficult times I went through. So I had to let go of them and keep the sense of joy. So that's a wonderful thing. But then also, you talk about technology, whether it be news or what programs or, you know, films and different types of television. What kind of things are you watching? Do you finish work at 6 p.m., come home, make a quick dinner and think, oh, I did quite well. I made, you know, rice and fish and some veggies, if you're lucky. Or, oh, I got the kids in bed early. Great. But then you watch on television for 4 or 5 hours, you know, some drama of people breaking up and arguing and angry at each other. What kind of music are you listening to? You're listening to hip hop where they just swear all the time and are angry? Or are you listening to so much news that you can't listen and cope with the politics and get wrapped up in that and talk to people in the office about that? Get rid of it. It's all toxic. It's so important to realize, what are you eating? What are you drinking? What are you thinking? What things are you taking in through your eyes? What you're reading, what you're watching, television, film, podcasts? What are you listening to? The drama from friends and family, the podcast again, or the radio. What things are you feeling from, you know, the things you have in home and so forth? If any of those areas in your life you consider to be even 1% toxic, and I really mean 1% toxic, you think it's okay to watch the news every single morning and it's miserable about the weather, it can be in Los Angeles as well, by the way, everyone, you know, or it's miserable about the news, or, you know, the turmoil of you know, what's going on in around the world. I'm not saying don't be inquisitive what's happening in the world. It's important to be aware, but it is very important to be aware of what you're soaking up, because that is what sits in your body. Now, anybody who goes to the doctors and gets themselves checked out, and we're in a wonderful place at the moment in the 21st century where Western medicine is phenomenal. We are on the cusp of some amazing technologies. Even in the next few years, from my understanding and talking to some experts, this nanotechnology, you'll be able to go in, have the implant with this nanotechnology, you know, tinier than we can see, to be able to eat any tumors that we have inside of us. We won't even need to have mastectomies even in 2 to 3 to 4 years, from my understanding. And again, I'm not an expert on the subject, but that's just me talking to scientists. But it's important for us to go back to our roots. What have our ancestors done? How did our grandparents eat? They ate off the land. They didn't eat sugar. They didn't eat processed foods. They didn't just run to a shop and get a sandwich. You know, what did our great-grandparents eat? They fished. They hunted. They went to a little store with farm-grown eggs. And I'm not saying this has to be expensive. You don't have to spend thousands on it. You can grow your own kale, your own lettuce. Stick some seeds. Do it with your kids. Put it in the flower pot. Add some water. I promise you, in a month or two, you'll be cutting your own kale. It's so easy. And it, once you've tasted that, it's way more delicious than running to a store or a shop where you spend quite a bit of money. It's in plastic. It's been shipped from California to England or wherever. And it's not good for us. So they're just some of the little things. And I think then also just to take it into balance and just live life with joy and to let go of any of the anger and toxicity and frustrations and everything. Because if you're living with that, and so far you might even be thinking, oh, well, I'm fine, I haven't got cancer, or, oh, well, that poor person, they've just been diagnosed with diabetes, or, oh, that's terrible. It will catch up with you. It will. And it's a daily process of not worrying about it, but an excitement of learning what our grandparents did, great-grandparents did. You know, the Native Indians, the Celtic tribes, the Romans, you know, you just go all the way back, the fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, good water, laughter, music, community, good, warm, loving people around you. You know, a good read, journal, write it out, spend time for yourself, empower yourself, be with animals, your dogs or horses or swimming or travel, whatever is possible, even in small ways. And you might think, well, I live in a city and that's not possible and I've got no money. Yes, you can. Step outside, put a pair of trainers on, go for a walk around your neighborhood and say hello to anybody that you've never met before. People might think you're a bit goofy, but just be joyous and light. And I promise you, after time, a little time, people will start saying hello back to you. You know, and you start interacting with people. That's what life's all about, I think.
All right. Well, look, Simon, we're going to have to end it there. We're out of time, but your passion's burning through there about all this. You, obviously, you've learned a lot from your experience of having cancer, and you've made it into a very positive actor in your life, the way it's directed you. So amazing. Thank you very much for sharing so much.
Absolutely. It's been my absolute delight, Robin, to have this opportunity to share with you and all of your lovely listeners. And I'd love to finish with this, that, you know, cancer or any major disease, or even if you're not at that point, which God forbid you would even get to that point, the word disease is broken down into dis-ease. And so it's up to us to figure out what do we not feel comfortable about in the way we're thinking, breathing, and living, and for us to be able to go deep and look at chakra work, Reiki, sound baths, community, what we can read, how we can eat, even the smallest things, going out and being with community, and also using Western medicine if it's necessary. Life is so precious and so fragile, and it's a blessing for each and every one of us, and for us to figure out how we connect to the world. And for me personally, I don't consider myself a survivor of cancer, but I feel that I'm a warrior of life. And each and every one of us has to find that warrior from within, because that's where we come from. And I'm just so overjoyed to have met everybody who's listening. And if they have any questions, I'd be delighted to answer directly through my own social media, which is at Summer Watson Official.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you very much indeed, Summer.
Thank you, Robin. It was a real delight. I really, really appreciate this opportunity. And my golden retriever is now fast asleep.
Goodbye.
It's fantastic that people like Summer are prepared to share their experience in such an open and vulnerable way. Do take advantage of her invitation to connect on social media. Links to material from the interview are available on yeslife.org.uk. Just click the show logo that's on the homepage. A reminder that next month, on the 22nd of June, Yes to Life is holding a Retreat and Restore Day at the amazing Bhaktivedanta Manor near Watford. To find out more and to book, look on the Yes to Life Facebook page or on the events page of yestolife.org.uk. After all the talk of Summer's musical life, I thought it'd be nice to end the show with one of her recordings. Summer's kindly agreed to let me play you Cavatina from her album Summer. Hope you can join me again next week for another Yes to Life show. Goodbye. The song.
beautiful.